Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Panier, and my good buddy Kevin Luca will be joining me here in just a little bit. But this week, I am honored to welcome back the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, Steve Schuster. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me as always. And as you were mentioning before, I'm really excited that we're finally having the opportunity to get back to Winnipeg.
Yes, Steve, that's exciting news out there. And was that a surprise, or that you kind of guys knew that this might be happening soon?
I think we always had hope. I mean, I think the reason why we, elected to basically play another season on the road, at least start the season on the road, was the hope that maybe at some point, halfway through the season or maybe the final month, that we have the opportunity to get back. So I don't know if necessarily we were surprised, but at the same time, we also knew that it wasn't a guarantee by any means, that there was definitely a chance when we started back in May and announced the partnership with Jackson, that we knew there was a chance that maybe we'd be there the entire season. So there was a lot of risk involved, and I can't say enough about Sam, our owner, for taking that risk for a second year in a row, where, let's be honest, it's been difficult financially for the team. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that when you go almost 2 years without generating, single dollar worth of ticket revenue, and that's the lifeblood of minor league sports. So, I can't say enough about Sam taking that risk, and, like I said, I'm just really excited for our fans to finally have the opportunity to come back out to Shaw Park and just enjoy a night at a baseball game. And then very much for our players, and specifically the guys that have only been here for 1 or 2 years, that have heard so much about what it's like in Winnipeg, but now they're finally going to have the opportunity to get out there. So just really excited for everybody involved, and looking forward to August 3rd.
Let's talk about Sam Katz for a minute with me, Steve, because, I know that there was some haggling about the stadium situation, and some fans were kind of critical of, what the team was looking for in a lease. I thought this showed an incredible amount of loyalty to the city, that he kept that team going during this time. And I hope that that's kind of resonating in the city. Is that the feeling that you're having at this point?
Yeah, I don't think there are any fans that are really critical of the lease. The situation was, that lease had been signed. We're still in that original lease that was signed almost 25 years ago. So, I'm not really sure how that came together, but that's what's in place. And I think the deal that we did sign back in is either October or November, that I think it's very, very much equitable for both the team and for for the city of Winnipeg. I think it's a win-win for everybody. It's certainly a win for the fans, who are going to be able to continue to come out and call Shaw Park their home ballpark in Winnipeg for another 10, 15 years. So I think it's really exciting, and I think it's a win-win for everybody involved. And I think we're all just kind of happy that it's kind of been finalized and put behind us, and that we're coming home on August 3rd to enjoy it.
Now, you were talking about season, ticket sales being kind of the lifeblood of a minor league team. The team's kind of under the gun to try to get ticket sales going on with such short notice. So what has been the fan reaction, and how have ticket sales been going so far?
Well, again, it's hats off to our great fans. I mean, throughout the last 2 years, there have been countless season ticket holders and corporate partners that we've had for many, many seasons that have basically just told us, hey, keep our deposits or keep our payments for next year. And, they did that in 2020, and we had all the uncertainty again for this year, and they said the same thing: hey, just hang on to it. If you guys don't come home, then hang on to it for 2022. So, again, that speaks volumes to the loyalty of those fans and those corporate partners or season ticket holders or mini pack holders that, been with us for so many seasons, some of which have been with us every year since 1994, before we even moved into Shaw Park. So can't say enough about them, and we're just really excited to finally, I guess, pay off their loyalty and give them at least some home games in Winnipeg here in a week from today. And just can't say enough about the support and the loyalty over the years, and we're super excited to have them out of the ballpark.
I'm sure the players are happy to know that they'll be sleeping in their own bed here for a little bit. So what overall has been the impact on the team, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a little boost in energy. You know, the announcement came, I think it was on this past Thursday, so we're kind of at the tail end of our time in Jackson. But, you know, like I said, we've got guys like Logan Hill and Nate Antone that have been here for almost two seasons, and part of the reason why they signed with the Goldeyes was the hope of getting to enjoy everything that Winnipeg has to offer. You know, the great ballpark, the great crowd support, you know, living kind of a downtown metropolitan type area. And I'm just super excited for those guys to finally get that opportunity. You know, I'm excited for, we've got three Canadian guys, you know, aside from my star, but we've got three Canadians and Kyle Thomas, Landon Barasa, and Travis Seabrook, who, you know, they're going to get the opportunity to pitch in their home country for the first time and might have the opportunity to have some family and friends come out and visit them in Winnipeg. So I'm really excited for them. I, you know, at the same time, I'm also excited for the longtime Goldeyes, like the, you know, the Darvels and the Kyle Martins and the Tyler Hills, who have actually played in Winnipeg before, but have kind of missed out on it the last two seasons. So they'll have an opportunity to see some familiar faces back in Winnipeg. So, yeah, from a player standpoint, I'm just excited for everybody to get the chance to come back. And, you know, August 3rd can't get here soon enough.
And Kevin was kind of joking with me when the announcement came out that last year it was August when the Saints got to go back. So this must be the time of the year when teams get to return to their stadiums.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. That's, you know, that is kind of interesting. It worked out that way. So, yeah, just, you know, whenever it was, to be honest with you, if it was September 3rd and we only got to go back for like a few days, I think we were all kind of on board with it. So we're just thankful to the local, the provincial and federal health authorities for working with us and kind of recognizing that, you know, we put together a pretty thorough, you know, and we think reasonable COVID-19 readiness plan that is going to allow everyone that comes to the ballpark to feel safe, whether it's a fan, a player, a coach or a staff member, that, you know, the protocols are in place to do our best to try and limit the spread of the virus. So we're just thankful to the government and health authorities for kind of recognizing that and giving us the opportunity. And, you know, like I said, August 3rd can come here soon enough.
Now, Dan Vaughn was talking about his show early on Monday about some players were being released because is it that they don't have the vaccine and they can't get into Canada? Could you clarify that if that's possible?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works. I know that the requirements are the players and the coaching staffs on both sides, in order to gain entry into Canada, part of the agreement is that they have to be vaccinated.
Okay, so that could impact opposing teams as well, I would gather, later on.
Yeah, like I said, I know that the part of the agreement is that the Goldeyes and their opponents, the players and their staffs, and order to gain entry into Canada, they're required to be vaccinated.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how well the team is playing right now, Steve, because you were mentioning Kyle Martin. He's been with the team now for a few years and is having maybe his best season for you guys right now. This guy really just his numbers are incredibly impressive and just consistently continues to deliver. Tell us a little bit about Kyle Martin and kind of his preparation and what makes him such a good player.
He cares about winning. I mean, first and foremost, he wants to win. He gets the ecosystem and the environment here in independent baseball. And, I mean, let me tell you something about Kyle Martin. You know, I think we've talked about this before, but, I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, he doesn't need to play independent baseball. He's got an engineering degree from the University of South Carolina. He's going to be set up really well whenever his post-baseball career begins. And, you know, he's actually kind of working part-time doing engineering stuff here while he's with the team. So you can imagine how complicated that kind of work is on top of everything that he's got to do to kind of get his body ready to play in a baseball game, you know, over the course of the season and putting up the types of numbers that he's putting up. So just can't say enough about his willpower, his willpower and determination. I mean, you know, last year he led the league in runs batted in, and, you know, we talked about this before. I mean, the last month of the year, he was maybe like 60% healthy, battling three or four different injuries and, you know, gutted it out, you know, didn't complain, didn't ask for a day off. He played in every single game. There were times where he refused to come out of the lineup, where Rick wanted to kind of give him some time off and he wouldn't come out. And he ended up leading the league in runs batted in. So, Just can't say enough about his competitive nature and what he means to the team. He's a great person in the clubhouse. You know, he's kind of emerged into, the team leader with the departure of Reggie Abercrombie after the 2019 season. So we're really lucky to have him. And, I'm really happy that he's been able to find the amount of success that he's had, because he's an easy guy to root for.
Now, you guys are facing the same problem it looks like everybody throughout the league's having, is that it's hard to keep your guys when major league organizations are taking them. What kind of a season has it been like for Rick to try to track down guys to fill roster spots as they're being taken?
Yeah, and you know what, though? That's what it's all about, though. And we're really proud to be one of the only two teams in the American Association, and I think all of independent baseball, us along with the Cleburne Railroaders, we're actively promoting our guys in social media to accounts like Flatground and Flatground Bats and Pitching Ninja, and trying to help guys gain the exposure that they deserve. We're proud to be one of the only two teams that are actively doing that, and we'd like to set a standard in that regard. Where I think a lot of teams or managers, when they recruit, they'll kind of tell you that we're gonna try and get you picked up. We're gonna do everything we can, and there's a free way, an easy way of doing that right now. And like I said, the Gold Eyes and the Railroaders currently are the only teams that are doing that, both in season and off season. So, hopefully that could be a recruiting tool, I think, for both of those clubs moving forward, that, we have the hard proof that we're promoting our guys out there, and it's not just, we're not kind of giving guys lip service in the recruiting process. So, hopefully long term that'll be a benefit to us, because the more guys that you do get picked up, and the more guys that you're helping to get exposure, the more likely you are to maybe win a recruiting battle for a key player down the road in the future. So we're really excited for all the guys that have been picked up. Corey Thompson is tearing it up right now in high A for the Peoria Chiefs with the St. Louis Cardinals. And really happy for him. I mean, he's a guy that probably wouldn't have been here in the first place had it not been for the pandemic releases last year. But Corey came in, great kid, worked really hard, really good attitude, and kind of blew away the competition. And now he's blowing away the competition back in affiliated ball. And we couldn't be happier for those guys. And the benefit it is, it gives you an opportunity to kind of see some younger kids that maybe in a normal year, the contending teams, the longtime contending teams like the Red Hawks and the Saints and the Gold Eyes, wouldn't necessarily put out in prominent roles. But we've got a kid today starting in Landon Barassa, one of those Canadian guys that just finished his college career at the University of San Francisco, and he looked really good in his pro debut last week against the Apollos. So excited about that. We've signed a couple of other rookie arms that I think are going to play prominent roles here over the final month, and Austin Henrik and Dylan Burns, they're straight out of college, that we're really excited about. So I think that's definitely kind of been, the silver lining of some of the adjustments when you get guys picked up and you've got to find replacements, that you're getting extended looks at younger kids that maybe could be a fit for you here moving forward, that in other years maybe you wouldn't be able to do that.
Now, we talked when the season began about the fact that, we got used to watching Victor Capion close out games, and now you have Jose doing the job this year. He's looked like he's really handling the job well for you guys.
Great person. Just one of my favorite people that we've gotten to know here over the last two seasons. And he's calm and collected. You're not going to find a guy more calm and collected on the mound in a pressure situation than somebody like Jose. I think you could argue he's been the best reliever in the league this year. He's taken on multi-out saves, four, five, six out saves when we've asked him to. He's pitched 3 or 4 days in a row when we've asked him to. And he's another guy like Kyle Martin that kind of understands the landscape of independent baseball. And he cares about winning. He had a tough game. I think it was the last game in Kansas City at the end of the June, where he actually made a pretty good pitch, a changeup away. And Yan Hernandez obviously had a great year, just got picked up by the Reds. He had a walk-off home run, and you tip your cap to him in the ninth inning. And Jose took that hard because he cares about winning. And everybody on the team, the coaches, the players, they all kind of gave him a big hug after and said, look, any success that we're going to have, you're going to be a big part of it. So, don't worry about that. And I think he's maybe given up one or two runs total since that game against Kansas City, and got a big save against Kansas City on Friday night in Winnipeg in the opener of the series, or I should say in Jackson in the opener of the series. So just outstanding person off the field, really, really good teammate. He's kind of, like Kyle Martin, kind of emerged as a bit of a leader for the pitchers this year. So we're just thankful for everything that he's done for us.
A stat that leaps out at me, Steve, that I'm just kind of shaking my head about is Nathan Antone's 29 strikeouts in 16.2 innings. I mean, that just sounds ridiculous to me. And is he just blowing guys away, or is he just smart in the way, or both, and how he's attacking hitters?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, he's thrown the ball so well for us the last 2 years. There was a little stretch there. It was kind of mid to late June where he spent a little time in the injured list, and I think they kind of rejuvenated him, because since he's come back, he's kind of taken things to a new level. I forget exactly what the numbers are, but I want to say it's something like 15 strikeouts in like 6 innings or 7 innings since he's come back from that short stint in the injured list. So another great guy. And like I said, he's one of those guys that I'm really, really excited for, that's going to have the chance to finally enjoy the true Winnipeg experience next week. And he can slot in a lot of different roles. I mean, he can close for you. He can be an eighth inning guy. He can be kind of a middle reliever if you need him to. He's done a good job this year, coming on with guys on base, inherited runners, and kind of a good matchup for that, because he is a strikeout pitcher. Where if he comes in maybe second and third, one out, he's the type of guy that can get you a big strikeout and knock up a run in that situation. So great person off the field, and really excited for the success that he's had, and looking forward to him having the chance to pitch in front of the Winnipeg crowd.
Now, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your time there in Jackson. So what was that experience like for you, and how did you find the fans embracing the team?
Yeah, I can't say enough about what they did. I mean, the Generals organization for welcoming us in, and the fans there, we had almost 1,400 there the Saturday night, the second to last game, and from the very beginning, they really welcomed us in. You felt bad for them too, because right, they lost their team. They didn't get to play last year because all of affiliated ball was canceled in 2020, and they lost their team there. They were one of the 42 teams that lost their affiliation, so you kind of understood where they were. They were coming, they were missing baseball, and from that very first exhibition game in May. There were fans out there wearing Gold Eyes caps and Gold Eyes t-shirts. So they kind of adopted us as their own club. And, you do kind of feel bad that, for them that we're leaving, because, now they're in a situation again where they don't, they don't have a team now for the final month of the season. But, I think the Generals did such a good job kind of taking care of us that, maybe they're an option, if not in 2022, because, the Lake Country team's going to replace the Apollos, but maybe in 2023, if we can get another expansion team down south, that maybe that club in Jackson could bring us to 14 teams and join the American Association. But, it's a gorgeous ballpark. They did a really good job taking care of the field, especially given that they didn't play at all last year. We weren't sure what to expect when we got there as far as the playing surface, because we knew that they hadn't played last year, but it was in tip-top shape, and they did a really good job maintaining it. Really big clubhouses. I think the player amenities there are good. They've got 3 full-size batting tunnels, so there's never a shortage of time and space for hitters to kind of get ready to get their swings in. So, like I said, maybe not next year, but maybe in 2023, if things work out, we could see the Generals come back in the American Association full-time.
Yeah, that looked like a city that would really fit in perfectly within the league. And some people have said to me, because of how far east it is, it just doesn't fit in geographically. But I think that's kind of a lame argument, to be honest with you.
No, it does, though, and that's the thing. So it's only, I want to say, like 9 hours maybe from Cleburne. So if maybe, they keep talking about Fort Worth, which I think would be a great fit if they can make it work. And, if Fort Worth comes back and then you add a Jackson, now you've got a bridge for the Chicagoland teams, because it's only 8-9 hours from Jackson to the Chicagoland, where there's going to be 5 teams now. So you can kind of stop in Jackson, maybe then travel on and hit up the 2 Texas teams or vice versa. And all of a sudden it does kind of fit in there. So the only, ironically, the only 2 spots that would really be tough to go to Jackson would be Winnipeg and Fargo, where, you know, you're looking at over 20 hours in the bus there. But I think as far as everybody else in the league, it's actually a much better fit than I think you might think at first glance.
So you guys have some big series coming up here when you return home. You have Milwaukee coming to there. You travel to King County. You travel to Chicago. You know, it's a little late in the season, but is this team built to make a big push and wind up passing up a team like Chicago and Fargo?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like the standings are what they are. I think we're 10 back of Milwaukee and 7 back of Chicago beginning today, and they've got great clubs, and Fargo's got a great club. But, you know, we like what we have. We've been playing really well. You know, I think we're going to get a boost, I think, from a morale standpoint and certainly from an on-field standpoint with the crowd support in Winnipeg. So, you know, I think it's just a situation where, you know, we like what we have, and, you know, the guys play hard and they care about winning, and, you know, I fully expect them to go out there and, 39 games left. They're going to play 39, you know, games as hard as they can. And, you know, we'll see where the chips, let the chips fall where they may, but, you know, we do have games against those teams. So, you know, we're probably going to have to win those games head to head, but I think we're more than capable of doing that. And, you know, I could see us definitely being there at the very end.
Do you know if there's special promotions the first night there that you guys are playing at home, or kind of the opening series at all?
Yeah, I know we're kind of putting that together, but you know, I know we're hoping to have fireworks, you know, certainly on that opening night on August 3rd, and several other times before the end of the season. I know we've, you know, fortunately kind of been dealing with some of the drought and wildfires in Manitoba recently that you know, we've seen kind of across North America, so. You know, I don't know if that might affect or not affect any potential fireworks games, but no, for sure, we're looking at kind of putting something together. And, you know, hats off to our staff that's been kind of working hard in the background here while the team's been in Jackson to have all this stuff in place here for next week.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they all of a sudden had to get into hyperspeed gear to get everything going together.
Yeah, no doubt. And just, you know, hats off, like I said, to Andrew and everybody back at the front office for, you know, kind of keeping things going there behind the scenes. So, you know, excited for them too. I'm really, it's been hard for everybody. And I'm really excited for everybody, that works in the front office to, you know, finally get to open the gates again and for them to see, some familiar faces.
Well, Steve, we didn't want to keep you too long here today, so we want to give you a chance to close out our show here tonight. So what's your final thought for us?
Yeah, just, you know, like I said, we're super excited to be coming home. You know, for all of our fans out there that are listening, you know, hats off to you. Thank you for staying with us through all the uncertainty of the last 2 years. And, you know, we're hoping to give you the best possible show here over the final 5 weeks. So just thanks to them. And I'm looking forward to a full house there on August 3rd.
Awesome. Steve Schuster, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, you bet, Rob. Take care.
Well, Kevin, it's always good to have Steve on. And exciting news about the team returning back to Winnipeg. I will admit, I was a little bit skeptical of that happening, Kevin, but you were believing it would occur. So another great prediction by Dr. Luco.
You had to wonder, you know, it just seemed like it was starting out on the eastern provinces and kind of working its way west, and just had to wonder if Manitoba was going to hop aboard, and looked like they finally got the call. You know, ironically, it's right around the same time that St. Paul got the call last year where they could come back to play at CHS Field, so must be something about August 1st.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I guess that is that's the time to start reopening stadiums, I guess, a little bit. Well, we'll come back to Winnipeg.
Those COVIDs must like to go hibernate on August 1st.
Yes, yeah, that's the solution. Well, we will come back and talk a little bit more about Winnipeg here in a moment, but we want to come and discuss peer performance pitcher and player of the week. Co-pitcher that we're going to have this week is both Tyler Visa from Kane County and Ryan Kuschmal from Milwaukee wind up earning honors from us out there. Let's first of all start with Tyler. You know, this is a guy who just, I think, just a couple of wins has pitched exceptionally well for the team so far, but came and tossed a nice, you know, three or four hit shutout against Fargo, a very difficult opponent, 2-0 shutout. You know, he's just been impressive for that team. And we were discussing last week about the potential for him being dealt, but he's really given the Cougars everything they could ask for.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate he ran to a hotter hand, of which you all introduce as your co-honoree of the week. But, yeah, with his outings, he definitely deserved to go 2-0. And, you know, that was some two tough teams he pitched against, too, with Milwaukee and Fargo-Moorhead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, had an outstanding start for them. Then, we'll jump into Ryan before we talk about their head-to-head matchup on Sunday. So Ryan comes out of kind of basically out of retirement. You know, he said he was looking to go down there to Mexico, and that didn't work out for him. So he comes back here to the United States and was sitting for a little while, then gets re-signed by the Milkmen and comes in and tosses one run in six innings and looked like, you know, they were talking about he felt like his arm was already built up, and it sure looked like he was ready to go from the start.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of wondering how he was going to do, you know, knowing that he was stretched out. We knew that he was going to be able to get some innings in, but I just kind of wondered what the results are going to be. He was a good pitcher for Milwaukee last year, but, you know, he was kind of overshadowed by all the former MLB guys ahead of him in the rotation, but he can't argue with the results going 2-0 for the week.
Now, we won't take any credit for saying, because he was on our show, that, you know, before the start, that had any impact whatsoever. We wouldn't be that self-absorbed, I don't think. So we're not going to say that. But Sunday, Ryan and Tyler squared off against each other, and this was kind of where Kevin and I were at on deciding who was going to be the pitcher of the week. Tyler Visa had the better stats overall, but Ryan Kusmal kind of outdueled them a little bit yesterday. Tyler giving up one run in seven innings, the only run coming in the seventh inning. Ryan Kusmal pitching seven shutoutings in the game as Milwaukee beat King County 2-0. So it was kind of like, well, it's hard to choose one over the other, and it just made sense to go with both guys.
No, I'm going to continue this debate, and or maybe agree to disagree, or maybe Joe Brand's going to have to be the referee on this. I swear it's Visa, because I saw a tweet today with King County introducing Visa as the pitcher of the week, and they said, all eyes on Visa. So I think it's pronounced Visa. You told me this before that you think it's Visa, but I think it's Visa.
Okay, but
I think he also
like
should have been
right.
Pitcher of the week, because he pitched against more difficult teams than Kusmal did.
And first of all, we're going to find out which is the correct pronunciation, because both of us will be in Kane County on Saturday, so Joe could correct one of us, probably me, he'll be correcting, so that's okay. You know, I agree with you, Kevin. Tyler had the tougher competition, so to speak, during the week. It's just, you know, again, when you're looking at the head-to-head matchup, Ryan got a little bit of the best of him there, and I don't think you can, either one of them, you really could have thought was well-deserving of the award this week.
Is that Visa's fault that he couldn't, is that Visa's fault that that the Cougar got shut out?
No, but it's not his fault.
Can he pick up a bat? Well, I guess he could,
Well, we didn't leave him out. I mean, he still wound up winning the award. The league wound up choosing him as their choice for this week as well, as a point streak.
Good job,
league. Peer performance player of the week, Osvaldo Martinez from the Cleveland Railroaders. This was a guy who, there was a couple of good choices out there. Kevin and I also looked at Nick Novak, who was having a very good season up there in Fargo, but wound up turning to Ozzy, as Brad Albert likes to call him. Had a nice 348 week, led the league in homers, slugging percentage, and runs scored, as well as he was fourth in OPS at 1.298. I personally kind of like this pick, Kevin, just because we talked about this a little bit last week with Josh Altman being a shortstop and Ozzie being a shortstop, and when you're not really expecting those kind of numbers out of your middle infielders, and I thought that was an impressive week for him. The league seemed to agree.
Well, yeah, you guys got your story, but I think it should have been Nick Novak because he had more runs batted in and hit for a better average. And he's a Minnesota boy. I mean, that's 1, 2, 3 winner. Should have been a no-doubter. With all apologies to Ozzie Martinez, but I felt like this should have been given to the pride of the Mankato Moondogs, Nick Novak.
Well, we like a little controversy here at This Week in the Association, so expect it to get worse. And Kevin and I will be ripping at each other by the end of this show, how about? Just to make it more interesting this week. All right. Well, Kevin, let's return back to looking around the league and let's discuss back on the Winnipeg situation. Now, they've gotten on a little bit of a hot streak here. Enter tonight's action. They're not playing tonight, but they will when they continue on tomorrow at 30-31. This was a team we'd kind of, thrown some dirt on. Now they are 7 behind Chicago right now, but is this enough of a boost for them, do you think, to get them back in the playoff chase?
I just don't know if there's the horses this year on the Go Ice team for them to make the kind of run they need to make to leapfrog, well, 3 really good teams with Fargo, Chicago, and Milwaukee. And I just kind of wonder if this will be a trap week this week. They know they're heading back to Winnipeg. I know most of them are looking forward to that. That'll get to my next point. But that's 6 pretty big games with Lincoln and Sioux City. We know Lincoln can slug you out of the ballpark, and Sioux City is also a tough place to win. So I don't know. There could be a little bit of a trap this week with those 2-3 game series where they need to watch out and not get into a bigger hole than they're already in. Now, and I don't know if you guys discussed this, but Dan Vaughn revealed on his Monarchs Mocha today that Winnipeg could be losing 3 pitchers as there's it sounds like 3 of the pitchers on the staff, allegedly. That was all according to Dan, for what I listened to from him today. 3 of the pitchers have chosen to not get vaccinated, therefore will not be on the Winnipeg roster any longer. So let's see how this all shakes out.
Hey, you got to figure that those guys get released and wind up with some other team against them. Sad as that is to say, but Canada has been very strict about what their conditions are. And I've been wondering, Kevin, about that too, since we're on this particular subject. I wonder how that's going to impact players on the other 11 teams coming to Winnipeg to play. Do they have to be vaccinated to get into the country to play against them? And
I believe that's
I don't
the
know
case.
The answer to that. Okay, so, we could see some rosters where 15, 16 guys get across the border and the rest don't.
Yeah, it could be like some of those trips where guys have been up at the border and teams have had to go into Winnipeg playing well beyond shorthanded. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, Kevin, I kind of like your thoughts on this one because this is something you and I were discussing over the last couple weeks, and that's attendance. We're a little disappointed about, crowds haven't really been out. Do you see the Winnipeg crowd pouring out there to Shaw Park and really getting behind their team?
Well, one reason why it will is just because absence makes the heart grow fonder. I mean, these people have been, they have restrictions that have gone beyond anything we've seen in the U.S., and these people are begging to get out and go do something. But within that, the Goldeyes have not been able to do anything as far as game promotions. They have not been able to do anything as far as group sales. And I think that with a lot of minor league teams, that's a big part of their turnout is getting these businesses and groups to come out. And you just don't have enough time to work that out with these businesses with only 20 games left on your home schedule and 1 month left. So, you know, they'll have a decent turnout, but, I mean, don't expect to flip the switch on and all of a sudden you're going to be filling the Shaw Park. Plus, too, they're demanding that people be vaccinated if they want to go to games, too. So that might be turning some people away also. But, you know, you can't judge them on what happens this year. This year's an aberration. So, you know, hopefully they get some good crowds and, you know, the organization's got to be bleeding money with the team playing in Jackson, so I hope for their sake that they get some good turnouts and get some ticket revenue moving in and getting some beer sold, some food sold, some souvenirs, and hopefully they can start recouping all the money they've had to lose by not being able to have home games.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest things that you're looking at here is that this is, I think people don't really understand around the league is that this is a team that's been supported by ownership with no revenue to them whatsoever over the last, you know, 14, 15 months now. And, man, for the crowd out there, I hope that they pour out just for that. Is that, hey, look, your team is needs some revenue now, and I hope they consider that. I hope that becomes kind of a motivator for them.
Well, you know, there are going to be those that remember our thoughts after the 2017 playoffs. You know, if we could get into Canada, you know, I would volunteer to sit on a dunk tank and let Winnipeg fans have their way and raise some money for the ball club. Maybe that would get the team into the black.
And we did offer that, too, I believe. So, you know, we might have to pony up. Now, if it's a vaccine thing, then I don't think either one of us is ever going to be crossing the border. So we might be left out right off the bat with that one. But I digress for a moment. So let's move on to Milwaukee for me, Kevin. Winners of 10 straight games at home, 9-1 in their last 10 games. This team is really catching fire. Excuse me, 8-2 in their last 10 games. Excuse me, right there. Top record in the American Association. It has been the thing that we thought would be the big factor for this team was the pitching staff and that they would be the reason that this team would be in the hunt. And that looks like that is actually coming to fruition for them now.
Yeah. You know, as much as I was touting that the team was going to have to do with the bats this year, you know, it seems like it's been all these little gradual moves made by Milwaukee that's produced a pretty solid pitching staff. And I think that's been a huge part of the streak that they've been on in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're getting phenomenal performance. Now, this team is 21-12 at home right now with this 10-game winning streak. So you got 17 games left. And I'm thinking about the way that they've gotten used to their park now. If this is a team that winds up having the advantage of home field advantage through both playoff series, we might be looking at a repeat here because they just look almost untouchable in their own home park.
It's kind of interesting too because when I was out there around Father's Day weekend, the thing that I was hearing from people out there is that, geez, we need to learn how to win at home, and boy, did they ever learn quick.
Yes, they did. Also, the top road record in the league at 19-9, so can win it any place they need to go. So, Chicago Dogs,
you know,
finishing
right
now.
That's going to be a huge accomplishment for Milwaukee, too, if they do get top record in the league. When you consider all the South teams get more than their share of games against Apollos, it's kind of tilted towards South being able to garner that home field advantage. So Milwaukee can manage to get top record in the league. That's going to be a huge achievement.
I think you're absolutely right by that, and the fact of that they're a South Division team's getting six or seven extra games against Houston, and then Milwaukee would get But still, three games ahead of where Kansas City is at right now. And, you know, people are going to say, well, Kansas City's lost some guys. Milwaukee's lost a ton of guys this season. They've had – their pitching staff has been, you know, decimated by – I think they've lost six or seven guys in the pitching staff alone. Plus, they've had David Washington out for a little while, and Mason Davis hasn't played for them but 14 games, and they found a way to continue to win. So, you know, if they wind up coming with a top record, that is quite a performance by Anthony Barone. You got to consider him manager of the year at this point.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a few days ago about manager of the year, and right now I'd say there's probably about three or four good candidates for it, because I think every manager in this league has been through a lot of stuff this year with all the guys getting signed. You know, we talk about teams losing guys to MLB organizations, so I think you look at your top three teams in each division, all of them have had to deal with the same thing. So when you think about it, everyone's kind of on the same playing field there.
Absolutely right about that. Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about Chicago here. Had a little bit of a tough week out there. 6-4 in their last 10 games. They are three games behind Milwaukee right now. A lot of things still to really like about the Chicago team, but they just look like they're just, it's not the way, I just don't feel like this team is playing with the same energy or gusto or something that we saw a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that was tough for them to lose, to get swept by Milwaukee. When you look at it right now, that's the difference in the division is those three games that Milwaukee took from Chicago to begin the week. Well, you got to give the Dogs credit for taking two out of three against a very good Cleveland Railroader team over the weekend. So maybe the Dogs have righted themselves, and that sweep at the hands of the Milkman might have been a wake-up call.
The team winds up also losing left-hander Jake Dahlberg, who has his contract transferred, one of the numerous group heading towards Major League Baseball. I guess we're not going to see that big swing back. They did have the baseball draft, I think, a couple weeks ago, but I haven't seen any kind of major change since that happened. So I don't know what that's about, Kevin. But
well, I think that's going to get tempered, too. You know, you got the guys of being flushed in organizations, but within that, you also have guys within all those organizations. As the season goes on, the injuries accumulate, so maybe they're just not going to see that bounce back at guys to the American Association.
Heading on to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, two games behind Chicago in third place in the North Division. And let's focus on two guys here, because two guys on this team are on huge streaks right now. First of all, John Silviano, 27-game hitting streak, raising his average up to .287. You and I talked about this a little last week, Kevin. This was a guy who was known as a big power bat, but you know, I was expecting, you know, .230, .240 out of him. Man, 27 straight games for this guy, I think, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, if you would have told me a guy in Fargo was going to have a 27-game hitting streak this year, I would say it was going to probably be a Carell Prime or a Leo Pena, but Silviano's definitely been a surprise there with the run that he's been on.
63 points he's raised his batting average during that streak, Kevin. That's just pretty remarkable. Jordan George also on a 42 consecutive game on base streak. So it reached base in 42 consecutive games, trailing only Wyatt Ulrich there in Sioux Falls. You know, Jordan George played very well last year in the COVID season, had a fine year. And but his name hasn't been kind of the one that I was really looking at, because, you know, you got guys like Leobaldo Pena, and you were talking about Carell Prime, but he's really established himself as quite a ball player there for the Redhawks.
Yeah, you know, you're right when you say that. He's kind of been kind of quietly going about his business up there, and, you know, people that follow the league, they know they know Prime, they know Pena. So, it's, yeah, you're right when you say that. Jordan George is just kind of been laying in the weeds. I'm sure the fans up there are well aware of how good of a season he's having, but league-wide, he doesn't quite have the name recognition power as some of his mates have.
We also do want to spend a little time talking about closer Alex DeBoard, who only has four saves, kind of moved into that role after Ryan Flores was moved into the rotation. 0.93 ERA. He's just been lights out for this club.
Yeah, you know, he thinks the Saves might come a little later as we get into the pressure of the pennant race and games become a lot more closer at the end. So, you know, you can't just go out and create your own save situation. It's got to have a slim lead. And there's some of those teams that the closers just don't get many save opportunities because when they win, it always seems to be by large margins. So, but, yeah, he's been lights on when the Red Sox have needed him. And when you think about it, his emergence allowed them to move a guy like Ryan Flores into the starting rotation.
Talking about King County, Kevin, fifth place in the division right now. And this, you know, a few years ago when Mark Hamburger was with St. Paul, we used to kind of jokingly talk about it. It was Mark Hamburger and, you know, four prayers afterwards you're talking about. And when I look at this starting lineup for this group, it's like there's four or five guys on this team that I think you can kind of depend upon to, you know, put up some fairly decent offensive production. But, man, the bottom half of that lineup is just very tough. And I think that this has been a primary reason why this team has just not competed like we thought they may.
But, you know, they have sparks where they – especially little streaks where they can put up some runs. And, you know, there are some guys in that lineup that you know can hit. But, yeah, like you said, there is kind of a drop-off as you get into the lower part of the order. And it's been some spots in the field have just kind of been a revolving door, guys.
Heading on to the Gary South Shore Railcats, sixth place, 16.5 games behind Milwaukee right now. You know, they lost a couple of guys to major league organizations, and since then, Kevin, they just have not been a very good ball club.
No, you just got to wonder at what point do you maybe try to go in a different direction as far as your player procurement and your philosophy with the Railcats, because it doesn't look like a team full of young guys just out of college is getting the job done. And when you got all these other leagues out there too, that there's leagues where it is all guys just right out of college that didn't get drafted. So, you know, manager Greg Taggart's got a lot more competition for those diamonds in the rough than he has in the past. And right now things just are not clicking at all for Gary. They broke a long losing streak with a win against Fargo-Moorhead on Saturday night, but a six-game homestand that just got completed. They went 1-5, and obviously that's not going to get the job done.
Yeah, you know, you have to wonder here, Kevin, and talking with Dan Vaughn, it wasn't very long ago that this team was competing with, you know, getting in veteran guys. 2014, they made a bunch of big moves with George Samus and St. Paul to bring in some guys to bolster for a playoff run. And they carried that through into 2015, and then there was a kind of a change in philosophy. And, you know, I don't exactly know what ownership's stance is and how they're feeling about how much they want to pay on this team, but if this is going to be a team trying to build with college players, you got to figure that Gary is a 31-win team every year at best.
And at what point does the fan base get fed up with that? You know, it's one thing to go to the ballpark because, gosh, I want to watch baseball. But after a while, you know, watching your team lose games just gets to be very repetitive and unentertaining to the point that no matter what promotion you're running, people are going to start staying away from the ballpark. Granted, Gary's been holding up very well as far as attendance, but I think if you don't start taking a look at the way you're building your team, they might be suffering at the gate at some point.
Speaking about that attendance, 5,232 to yesterday's game. So they are keeping people coming into the game. But as you said, you know, if you're not competitive, you're not going to keep them around for very long. Kansas City Monarchs, Kevin, 2.5 games ahead in first place in the South Division. They lose their closer, Carlos Diaz, this past week. He signs with the Cincinnati Reds organization. Carlos Diaz went to Mexico. Yan Hernandez had his contract purchased by the Cincinnati Reds organization. So you lost your top player, you lost your closer. Doesn't seem like Kansas City's in any major trouble, though.
Yeah, you lost your closer, you lost your top hitter, you lost 2 out of 3 games in Jackson, Tennessee. Not exactly going to be the most memorable trip to Tennessee for the Kansas City Monarch organization. Not to mention that loss on Saturday night, a walk-off 3-run homer by Kyle Martin off of Brian Ellington, who I would imagine is going to probably get the nod as the closer for the Monarchs. So, not the most memorable weekend, but as we know with the Monarchs, they find a way to plug those holes. And even if they can't go out and get an established closer and a guy that can put up power numbers like Hernandez, if they can't find the guy, you definitely got a lot of in-house options for guys that can kind of pick up the slack and provide some offensive punch.
Well, the interesting thing talking about Ellington is in being down there a few weeks ago, I mean, this guy can hit in the high 90s on the radar gun. I think they even talked about he hit 100 one time. So he's got incredible stuff. And I'm not exactly sure if it's the high walk number, 17 walks and 26 innings, struck out 39 guys. So, I mean, he's a little wild at times. But I'm wondering if he doesn't wind up, you know, kind of being able to take over that spot, does the team take Jameson McGrain back out of the rotation and look to use him as their closer again?
Boy, with the way that's been going starting pitching this year, that would be a pretty risky proposition. I think it would have to take them going out and maybe find a guy in the trade market with a team out of contention to fill the spot in the rotation. You know, they say don't ditch plan A unless you got a heck of a plan B.
Very true. Cleburne has risen up, Kevin, 2.5 games out and in second place. They took it a little bit on the chin this weekend, but still a very competitive team out there that looks like maybe they are one player away, one key player away, I think, from being a serious championship threat.
What hole are you seeing with them?
I think this is a team that could use a little more depth in their starting rotation. Michael Gunn has looked very good for them.
Of course, that's the whole league when you think about it.
That's true. That's very true. What I think is different about them that I think separates them from some of the other teams that are in contention is if you talk about like Kansas. So Jameson McGrain has just been outstanding since moving into that rotation. He's had a couple of bad outings, but generally he's been phenomenal for them. Okay, Chicago's got a couple of good starters out there. I'm not sure if there's a guy in Cleburne that I would say, if he goes out to start, and I don't mean this in any disrespect to, I believe that you say this is Manzueta, but I don't think there's a guy in Cleburne that I would say, if you send this guy out, you're 65 or 70% of the chance you're going to win. I mean, maybe I'm wrong with that, but I don't feel like there's a go-to ace on this team.
Yeah, but you know, they can't just grow aces on a tree, and sometimes
yeah,
you just got to work with what you got.
I mean,
but
that's
why you know these teams that are in they're not in contention. They could really make a killing trading any valuable pitching pieces they have to a contender. We could be seeing one of those 4-5-for-1 trades coming up. But the good thing I think Cleburne's got going for them right now is the back end of the bullpen has been really good. So if they do get a lead, if the starter struggles, but yet they manage to all slug the other team, Krause and Edwin Cruz at the back of the pen have been unhittable. And that bodes well. We think they lost Tyler Wilson, but they're still in good shape that way.
And they lost Kyle Chavez, and they still wound up coming up with a different guy who was pitching okay in the starting rotation. They move him in the bullpen. He's been a great closer for them. So, I also think this. The one thing I will say on behalf of this team is, I think it does say a lot that you can have two guys that I know are both vets. So they got to be requiring a lot of the player salary, but are not producing at all. And that's John Nestor and Chase Simpson. But you can withstand some very disappointing, mediocre numbers from both those guys and still be in their position, I think says a lot about the depth of the starting lineup.
Boy, you know, and that's a tough call to make if those two continue to struggle. You know that's in their pedigree that they can hit. But you got to think, if they both continue to struggle, at what point do you maybe consider bringing in another catcher that can produce at the plate a little better? Or do you bring in an infielder that, and you might have to have Simpson or Nestor coming off the bench? That's a tough call for a GM to make.
Yep, wouldn't want to be in Josh Robertson's shoes on that one. Going down to Sioux City, we're kind of in a tough spot there, but the Houston Apollos came to town and righted the ship a little bit with a four-game winning streak for them. So they're now 3.5 out of first, a game behind Cleburne in the standings after Cleburne drops 2 or 3 over the weekend. Is there enough in Sioux City? I mean, right now, I mean, you got to figure Steve Montgomery's out there looking to try to make some moves to bolster that starting pitching staff in particular. But is there enough on this team right now if he can't come up with a guy to still get a playoff spot?
You know, I do find it a little alarming that right now they have struggled with Sioux Falls. I believe they either split or lost the six games those two teams played against each other. I would find that to be a little bit alarming.
The one thing I found interesting, Kevin, is when Matt Poborenko was signed, both of us thought Nate Gerken was finally going to get his opportunity, and it looked like they gave him one chance to try to close out a game, and it didn't work out, and they just turned away from him and turned to Danny Herbach guy. I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, I think it might, and you don't know, it might be a thing where they just go with the hot hand. Maybe it's going to be closer by a committee, because, yeah, I agree with you. I would, you know, when I look at it, I would think, too, that Gerken would have been the first guy up as far as a guy to replace Poborenko as a closer. But it is kind of interesting that, like you said, he got the one shot, it didn't work, and they ditched it for a plan B already. So
I guess they had a good plan B, though, so as Kevin said earlier. Lincoln Salt Dogs, 7 outs, 4.5 behind Cleburne right now. Right around that 500 mark at 31-30, but a nice 7-3 streak over the last 10 games. Really gave it on the chin to Sioux Falls over the weekend. I love this team. Every one of these teams we've talked about, Kevin, has some kind of hold to them, and Lincoln definitely could use some more starting pitching. But a guy like Ryan Long has been having quite a stretch for them. They're getting good production out of Josh Altman, who finally comes back for them. Forrest Alday has got his swing back in place. I mean, this is just a team that, as a lineup-wise, I really like this club.
Yeah, you know, it's when you think of lineups around the league, they're not the first team that comes to mind, but as Sioux Falls can attest to, they can give you a lot of headaches in a three-game series, and up and down the lineup, they've had good results, but just like a lot of teams, so if you don't have that starting pitching, it's just not going to matter in the end. But yeah, Ryan Long, I thought he's been kind of a nice story. He was a guy that was with Sioux Falls last season and struggled and eventually got released. But he's made the most of his second opportunity in the American Association with Lincoln.
Yeah, 97 batting average, 12 homers, 41 runs driven in. Of the 9 guys in their starting lineup, every one of them is hitting above 260. And, you know, that's just an impressive run that you look at there. And I think this is why this team is very difficult to play against, because you just, they're never out of games, I think. One thing I did want to bring up, Kevin, because stat guy there at the American Association website or whatever on Point Streak or whatever, how does Yaniel Perez get official position as pinch hitter? How did that work out?
Oh, not sure on that. It seems like he's kind of become a regular, so I don't know how that exactly that all works.
I just thought that was interesting when I was looking at that a few days ago. I thought, how did this guy wind up as his official position? Pinch hitter. Okay, well, all right, we're going to roll with it, though. Sioux Falls, Kevin, it looks like this team is just, the pitching is just not coming together. They're not producing runs like they have to win in the Birdcage, and it looks like it's about to be a very long last month and a half for the Canaries.
It's, yeah, it's got to be pretty depressing right now as a Canaries fan. Yeah, you had your series over the during the week where they took 2 out of 3 from Sioux City, but then they had a win finale against Lincoln on Sunday afternoon to salvage one game in that series, and now they embark on a long road trip. You just got to imagine them, what kind of situation they're going to be in when they finally do come back home. But who knows, maybe they'll take a liking to the road and try to turn things around a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think any of those guys who went to the Olympics, and they lost like Mitch Glasser and a couple of other guys there, Charlie Valerio, I don't think any of those guys are coming back for them either. So, I mean, even when the Olympics are over, I don't think they're intending to come back. So there's no real help coming down the pipeline for them once the Olympics end, unfortunately. So, tough
situation.
And
it seems like all those guys seem to, they've been gone for a little while now, so it's not like they're doing this bad and then they're losing guys on top of it. You know, those guys have been gone. They've got who they have right now, and right now you just got to look at what does Mike Meyer do in this situation? Does he start dealing some guys to contenders and get some assets to built up to build for next season, or do you just ride it out? It should be interesting. There could be a, you might see a lot of guys coming in to get looks as far as just trying to find a diamond in the rough somewhere to add a little spark to the ball club. You know, and the hitters have been decent, but I think even they've kind of tailed off lately too. So, but yeah, the pitching has just been a problem spot all year, and I just don't see it getting better anytime soon.
Finishing off with Houston, despite a 1-20 July to this point, a couple guys we just wanted to quickly mention. We've talked about Blake Berry, and he's been having a phenomenal season for them at 305 with 6 homers and 18 runs driven and in 53 games. You know, I mean, you're not getting much protection, unfortunately, in that lineup for him, and he's put up some pretty good numbers. But a guy I really liked last year when I was following the Pecos League when they were doing their deal down there in Houston last season was, I believe that I'm saying Aaron's last name correctly, at Takex. I could be wrong about that. But 350 in 16 games since coming from the Pecos League to join Houston, and he has just been, I mean, I watched this kid last year a bunch, and he just has a sweet bat to him, and I was just glad to see, you know, he's getting that shot. And I hope that materializes into something like we saw like a Logan Trowbridge a few years ago with Salina.
Yeah, it's very possible. Like you said, Salina has had their share of success stories of guys that endured the season for them and found a spot as a regular on an American Association team. I believe Jonathan Maroney and Trowbridge are probably the two biggest examples of that.
I forgot to mention it. Jonathan Maroney had quite a run there with the Winnipeg Goldeyes. Whatever happened to him? Did he decide to retire or something? I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that. But see, Kevin brought up a name from the past. We'll have to find that out. All right. Well, let's move on. We're at the very popular, we're going to say now, this is picking up some serious momentum out there, Kevin, with the Kevin Lucco power rankings. This is a big deal now. So first of all, let's talk about the news that you got going on out there with it.
Yeah, for some reason, the American Association today decided to pick up on what I've been doing for the last few years here, and decided they put it out in a tweet today asking on their Facebook and Twitter pages listing my power rankings and asking people for their opinions on whether I'm right or not. I looked around, I haven't seen any objections yet, so My system must be working. My very, very sophisticated mathematical analytical system.
Which we're not telling how that came to be.
No. As a matter of fact, I had just switched it, but I'm not telling anyone how I did it.
Right on. Number 12.
Okay, well, the 10th inning stretch power rankings brought to you by the Swedish Women's Olympic Soccer Team. Number 12 is Houston. Number 11, the Gary South Shore Rail Cats. Number 10, Sioux Falls Canaries. Number 9, Kane County Cougars. Number 8, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Lincoln South Dogs in at 7th. Sioux City Explorers in the 6th spot. Number 5, the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks. Number 4, Cleburne Railroaders. Chicago Dogs at number 3. Kansas City Monarchs in 2nd place behind the 1st place Milwaukee Milkmen.
Fantastic rankings for this week. We like those lots. Let's quickly, before we get into this week in the association, true and false, let's quickly jump around independent baseball around there a little bit. Man, those Long Island Ducks on a 12-game winning streak out there, Kevin, out there in the Atlantic League, has helped to catapult them to a 7-game lead in the North Division over the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. And I don't care what kind of level of baseball you're talking about. A 12-game winning streak is quite a streak.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's so easy to lose a game. You know, you just have like a starter having a bad day, or a closer blows a game, or the bats are off for a day. So it's so easy to lose a game. So it just makes a team putting together a 12-game winning streak that much more impressive.
They are currently a full game ahead of the Lexington Legends for the top record in the Atlantic League. Lexington leading the South at 31-19. They have won 2 games in a row. Heading to the Frontier League, our good buddy Tom Vaith winds up a half game out now in 3rd place in the Northeast Division for the Frontier League out there, as the Washington Wild Things are at 25-27, just trailing New Jersey. Sussex County looks like they're pretty much of a lock to win that division. They are about 50 games into the season, which is, I think they play a 96-game season out there in the Frontier League, so a little more than halfway through, which means I should do something to talk about that a little bit in some kind of article. Quebec comes back out into first place in the Atlantic Division, and then we got Schaumburg going the opposite direction of the other partner in the ownership group there as they are leading the Central. And we have Florence with a 2.5-game lead over Evansville. You know, I know, Kevin, you and I have seen this situation in the American Association on a number of occasions where a division is really bad, and especially when there were 3 divisions. And so a team got in that had, you know, was right around 500 or whatever, and then some team that was really good didn't even get a shot because the team that won that division was far, you know, had an exceptional record, and then let's say the wild card team, when they used to do that, was really good as well. So I bring this up because I'm looking at Florence here at 34-19. Evansville is at 31-21, 2.5 games out. One of those teams is going to win, you know, probably 55 games and not make the playoffs because only one team comes out of every division. And when fans kind of look at that and think how unfair that is, that's just part of the game. I mean, what do you say?
I cringe when I see leagues that have divisions with only 3 teams in it. To me, that's not a division. That's a pod. And
true.
I would rather see, like, a league with, okay, how many teams do we have in the Can-Am League? 12? Maybe
so
more?
Frontier League now.
Frontier.
So they are 14 teams. They broke up 2 divisions of 3, 2 divisions of 4.
Okay, how about just 2 divisions with 7 teams? Top 2 division winners, obviously, would make the playoffs, and then wild cards go to the next 2 best records overall, regardless of division.
That would have made sense. And I don't know why they did this, because the interesting thing about this, Kevin, and the way they made the schedule was, So you played a bunch of games within your division, and then one other division you played a bunch of games against. But then you don't play any games against the other two divisions. Well, why didn't you just make that one division and play all your games against them? I mean, that would have
Yeah, you know, even do something where, like, top two teams in each 17 division would get to make the playoffs, and then that way you're still limited in traveling. The only time you'd have the big travel would be for the championship series.
Yeah, I that would have made perfect sense. But we're not running out there. We know some people who are very smart running that Frontier League, and so we will tip our cap to them and recognize their brilliance as the guys running the league. So we're okay with that. Well, Kevin,
maybe there's this week in the Frontier that maybe they could let some guys out. That would be a good this week on the Frontier.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I think you need to get a couple people out there to get going on that.
Let's talk about this week in the association, true or false, for this week, Kevin. So at number one, Kevin.
So let's see how many I can get wrong this time.
Chicago and Milwaukee are the teams that are going to make the North Division playoffs.
True. I don't trust the starting staff for Fargo to hold up over the stretch. So, and you know, Chicago's had trouble with Milwaukee, but those two teams have concluded their season series against each other, so there won't be any more issues with that. So I think you're going to see a Milwaukee-Chicago first-round series.
Okay. Wyatt Aldrich reached 46 games with his consecutive game streak of reaching base, 10 away from the American Association record. He will break the American Association record for consecutive games reaching base.
False. I just got a feeling with the Canaries going on the road, there's going to be some night where it's not going to go well for Aldrich and the streak will be broke. You know, another good news on Wyatt Aldrich, though, his former Northwoods League team, the Bismarck Larks, are retiring his number on Monday. It'd be happening just as we're recording the podcast. So I thought that was kind of a neat deal.
Wow, that is pretty cool. So what is having your Northwoods League jersey retire? Is there a big ceremony to that? Or what do they do for that?
I guess he went up to Bismarck and they had a celebration for it tonight.
Well, right on. Great for him. That's awesome. Number three, and this isn't something we usually like to talk about, but we're going to throw this one out at you, Kevin. At least two managers will be replaced after the season ends.
You know, I'm going to say false on this because I see this season as kind of an aberration sort of season with all the guys being signed away from by MLB teams where I don't think any manager has done anything that deserves them losing the job over.
Do you see ownerships for the 11 owners out there that their understanding? I mean, you know, no disrespect to owners out there, so don't come down on Kevin and I about this. I'm saying you guys want to win. We totally get that, okay? Do you believe all 11 owners are saying, look, we understand if our team didn't perform particularly well this year because all these guys got signed away from our club?
Yeah, I believe owners are smart enough to know enough about the baseball side to realize that.
I hope that is the case, because that is something that worries me a little bit out there, Kevin, that some owner's going to say, well, you know, we expected bigger things out of you. Well, everybody expected bigger things than what they came up with, unfortunately, this season. So but let's hope that's the case. Okay, so on to number four. Anthony Barone is the manager of the year.
Boy, I I am going to say true on that because last year he was manager of the year, but there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, they went out and got all these guys. All he had to do was just plug them in. Well, Rone has had to do a lot more managing this year, and right now we're seeing the Milkmen cruise along with just as much success as they had last year with the stacked ball clubs. So I'm not saying there's not no other good candidates out there, but I just got a feeling that if Milwaukee holds on to win the North, that he will get the nod.
There were two guys that we know quite well that went with a different guy for their manager of the year. We just want to point that out there. And number five, Kevin, dedicated directly at you, Kevin Lucco and his power rankings will become the authoritative ranking for American Association Baseball.
Oof. You're asking me to show humility here, which I'm not, maybe more so than most normal people.
No humility.
I'm going to go none of the above. Well, I guess so. We'll just see if it takes off or not. I think, like I said earlier, this isn't a new thing. I think people that follow my blog and follow me know that I've been doing this for, I think I started in either 2018 or 2019. So this is a new thing. It's just that some are just starting to catch on to it now. So we'll see if it has wings or not. But it's been enjoyable. I think it makes for a good blog, too, where I can, instead of doing like a notes blog, I can tie everything into just one big blog where I do the rankings and talk about each team as I put them in position in the blog. And, of course, include fabulous photos from Jennifer Andrici.
If I remember correctly, I believe it was 2018 that you began, because we didn't do it in 2020 because you didn't want to do it with the six teams. And in 18, you picked it up about halfway through the season, and then 19, you decided to wait till about halfway in the season so there was some numbers to work off of. So technically it's the fourth year of it, but it's technically the third year, I guess, too. So unfortunately because of last year, but. Good stuff out there, Kevin, for sure. What else is going on?
You know, it's a lot like the NCAA power rankings that people see for football and basketball. I think generally the theme of how I go about it is relatively the same. There are some human components of it where I will, if teams are tied, I will make the call on who I believe is the better ball club.
And always right at that, too. We just wanted to throw that out. What's going on 10th inning stretch, Kevin?
Well, if you check my archives, last Wednesday, the Fox 9 Twin Cities Town Ball Tour came to my hometown, and it was a big day for the city as the county fair was going on, and we had a packed grandstand for amateur baseball on Wednesday night, so you can read my game story there and a wrap-up of the day's festivities. It was a great day for my hometown, and the packed grandstand was quite a sight. So I'm hoping better days are ahead for the local town ball team, because I tell you, it's a lot more fun covering a game with a full grandstand as opposed to maybe 30, 40 people.
I completely agree. No crowd is no fun, I will say, because that's and good to see people getting back out there, despite crazy talk about new lockdowns and other dumb crap going on out there. Glad to see things are getting back to normal. Adam, Minor League Sports Report. But the time this show airs tomorrow, the brand new homepage for minorleaguesportsreport.com will be visible to everybody out there. So you can come out and check that out, and if you haven't already. And then we will be working on the next section will be to completely revamp the baseball part of the site. Then we'll start working on hockey and college football from there. But that will be the stretch we'll be working on, get ourselves a good-looking baseball thing. Unfortunately, probably by the time the season ends. But we'll probably, well, maybe by the end of August, we'll have the entire thing done. But that's where we're at. So it's a sharp looking new homepage, and it's still got some tweaks to do to it because of the baseball stuff we got to still add there as it's going along. But it's going to be awesome, and so we're loving it. And
so
they're
going to be like a ribbon, like a cyber ribbon cutting ceremony.
We probably should do something like that. I have to figure out what that would look like. But we could try to do something. Something. I think that's a good idea. Kevin, do we have a final thought for this week?
Yes, we do, and it's going to be related to baseball and actually to the American Association. Last week, through social media, reports came out that Houston Apollos players are not being paid by, I guess it would technically be the Pecos League. And I just find this just to be completely embarrassing to all involved. You know, these players are out there chasing a dream, and you know, it's hard enough that they're playing 100 games in a row, and then when you don't give them whatever meager salary they're working for, they're just making it even tougher for them to compete. And I know the situation is, you know, the Pecos League has a reputation for not paying the players very much, if anything, but it's just, as much as the Pecos League thing, it's also, I think, American Association needs to make sure that the situation gets remedied. I know the teams where the Apollos are, the cities where the Apollos are going, I know they're getting accommodations, but for some reason they don't even have a team bus. They're having to travel by van. So I'm hoping they get treated well when they get to these towns, because they're just certainly not being treated well by their own league. And like I said, I think it's, you know, the American Association knew what they were getting into when they decided to make this agreement with the Pecos League. So I'm hoping that someone does the right thing, and these guys that are still sticking it through the rest of the year get treated right for the effort they're putting into putting 100 games in and trying to be produce a quality baseball game.
I do want to say that I did reach out to Commissioner Josh Schaub to ask about this directly, and according to him, that story is not accurate. In his words were they were dispelling that story. Now, I never saw a dispelling of the story, so I don't know what the league did to actually shoot that down or how they're presenting a different angle of it, but according to them, there's nothing, no truth to the rumor of that story, and I don't know.
Well, I hope he's right. I just think, though, when you hear, you know, when you go through year after year of these stories of minor league players not being paid or being paid poorly, it really makes it pretty easy to believe the story. I think there's a Twitter account, I forget, the minor league advocates or something of that sort, that just continue to tell these stories about these horrible situations that minor league ball players are put into. They showed a picture from, I believe it was the AA Springfield Cardinals. They had to sleep in what looked like a hotel ballroom. There were guys like lining up chairs front to front and using those as a makeshift bed. So,
wow.
So, like I said, I'm hoping that tirade I just went on, I am hoping it was for naught, but it just seems like year after year we just hear all these stories out of the Pecos League with guys not being treated well. And, you know, if the story gets around and enough people are hearing about it, I would hope that the American Association would step up and make an official statement on it, as opposed to just shooting it down like Commissioner Schaub did with you.
And I do want to say is that it is a something that Kevin has talked about on the show on previous occasions related to some other things that not related to this directly, but that when you have an image being presented, and the specific image we were talking about earlier was the bus situation breaking down. When you put a story like that out, it presents a bad image of the league. And people are, if they're reading a story, accurate, somewhat accurate, not accurate at all, it doesn't really matter. What they saw was Houston Apollo players aren't being paid. Look at this American Association Baseball. You know, what's going on? It doesn't matter that these guys are coming from another league. What matters is it's American Association Baseball. And if that's the legacy you're kind of putting on it, that's the things people are understanding about you and believing to be true, it doesn't bode well, you know. But we'll see. Kevin, I'm going to give you one other thought. I'm going to give a little bit of a final thought here tonight as well. It's my understanding that because of the Atlantic League about to implement that new rule where they're moving the pitching mound back, that a lot of veteran players from the Atlantic League, especially pitchers, are saying, you better deal me. And for American Association fans who have been a little distraught by watching all their players leave and head to other major league organizations and things like that and kind of left figuring out who's on their roster each night, you might be seeing some of the best Atlantic League pitchers coming this way because they don't want to be pitching where they're putting their health and their pitching career in danger, which is totally understandable. So we might get a little boost here, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, a favorite of ours, Mike Devine, he opted to go pitch in the Mexican League, so that's going to also be an option. But, you know, they only need so many pitchers in Mexico where some of these guys are going to see their second best option as pitching the American Association. So, like you said, there could be help on the way.
Let's hope that's the case. Well, we want to thank Steve Schuster for joining us once again. For Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.